Welcome back, everybody, to
How
the
was that
Gridiron Pulse.
poolside?
We are here for episode number 14. Got just me and Cole here today. How we doing, Cole?
I'm doing good, man, and it seems like you have taken over the reins as the introer and really the one that steers the ship here. So, you're very versatile guy.
Well, I like to be whatever the team needs me to be. I can be that, especially if
Just
half
a
the
team
team's not
guy.
here half the time. So if it's just whether if it's just me
Oh.
or Carter. It seems like I'm the one constant factor here, so I'll just take it upon myself.
You know what? I'm gonna let that one go because you're not wrong. I have been very on and off on the pod, so we can't have it. You gotta be more consistent.
You're also a very busy man. We completely get it. I mean, we love to have this 1 or 2 hours a week with you here just to talk sports here on the Gridiron Pulse. We got a pretty loaded show full of topics today. I'll just run through a couple of them pretty quick here. Obviously, we have Scottie Scheffler, newest PGA champion, just destroyed the field. We had a couple game sevens this past weekend in the NBA that were pretty poor, to say the least. We got a Georgia versus Texas A&M baseball series to recapping the Braves over the Red Sox, and then kind of a little teaser for the end. We might have next year's Ja'Marr Chase with some interesting clips. I know you brought that one up a couple episodes ago, but we can just go ahead and dive right in here to the PGA Championship. Scottie Scheffler destroys the field. Was pretty ho-hum for the first couple days, just kind of sitting around 5, 6, 7 under, and then just kind of ran away with it. I mean, ended up winning by 5 shots over 3 people, tied for second over DeChambeau, Harris English, and Davis Riley. Funny enough, the guy who applied the most pressure on Sunday isn't even in that second place. He actually finished, kind of got to scroll down for this one, tied
You
for
like it.
eighth at 4 under. It was Jon Rahm. At one point in the match, when Scotty was going from the front to the back nine, Rahm was at 8 under and Scotty was at 9 under, and he was kind of applying pressure. What'd you get out of the PGA Championship, watching it and everything, and how do you think it went?
I think for me, the biggest thing I learned is that I'm just not going to put very much like into the first 2 days, because first 2 days of a golf tournament, you're like, oh, who's first? Who's this? Who's that? It's like, who's this Vegas guy? Who are like all these bums that are on the top of the source? You're like, who's Smalley? Like, what the heck are these guys? And then sure enough, you fast forward all the way to Sunday, and it's the Scheffler, Rahm, and DeChambeau up there at the top. And then, of course, you got other guys mixing, like you said, Harris English, who are, sometimes around that time. But yeah, no, Scotty once again gets it done. And Rahm, I give credit to Rahm because he was in flat out second place. But he knew going into the last three holes that he needed to be aggressive. And that aggressiveness cost him like spots in the leaderboard. But I don't think Jon Rahm cares about being second or eighth. He had to attack pins, and it caused him to hit it into the water. Everyone else in this last round, and really those last 2 days, it was just birdie, bogeys, bogey, birdie, birdie, par, birdie. And it was just all up and down, up and down, up and down. And it looked like Scotty was going to be that in this round. The front nine, he was like one over or something like that. I can't remember. He did not have a good front nine, but he just steadied the ship. And I think he probably shot like one or two under on the back nine to finish at 12 under. So, I mean, he was just steady, and he gets, once again, he is now halfway to the career Grand Slam. He's got the PGA Championship, and of course, he's won the Masters twice. So, I want to say, what was the, I heard Jim Nantz say something that he's the first golfer, or it's only, he has two majors by the before the age of 28, and only like Jack Nicklaus and Tiger have done that or something like that. So I mean, he is, I mean, right now we are in the era and the Scottie Scheffler generation, because we have not seen a golfer do what he's doing since those guys. And of course, last year he had the Storck run where he won like 8 times or something like that. He's only won twice this year, and only won twice, and now he's got a major under his belt. So, It'll be interesting to see as we now look towards the US Open.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting one looking at that US Open at Oakmont Country Club. Just kind of wanted to go back here and see. We had a low round of the day was our boy Harris Inglis, proud Georgia Bulldog. He went from even to six under, shooting a 65, and he was in the clubhouse so early, obviously, and it was just like he was just at the bottom of the leaderboard, but he was always on that front page. And it was like people just kept dropping and dropping and dropping. And by the end of the time, we were like, Harris English is gonna get second place here. So got some payout numbers in front of me here. Harris English went from, if he would have just shot even par, because he was at even par coming into the day, coming into Sunday, and he would have made $89,000. He ended
Pretty
up
good.
tied for second. He won $1.4 million. That's all it took to shoot six under, and it was the quietest six under that you'll ever see too.
I mean, it's so simple, Jacob. Like, if you want to make money, just shoot six under at Quail Hollow, back nine. All right.
Yeah, I mean it seems pretty simple at that, but yeah, looking ahead to the US Open is next month. I think it's like June 15th or 16th, something like that. It's honestly right around the corner. Oakmont Country Club should be a doozy. Seen some pictures and videos of the courses and all the rough and how they do like the ball drop and all that stuff with the rough. It's so thick. I mean, you got to think that coming into the round, it's probably going to be similar to how this one was. It's going to be Scotty up there. It's probably the odds-on favorite. Then Rory's probably not far behind, along with DeChambeau. And then someone like Rom with a good showing this weekend is probably not too far off.
Yeah. So, interesting conversation that I saw. I think I saw a TikTok about this, but I want to get your thoughts on it, Jacob. So, obviously, you have four majors, and it's highly regarded that the Masters is the best one, and the PGA Championship is like the worst one. The point of contention is which one is better, the US Open or the British Open?
I feel like that's kind of difficult because they're
Like,
two very different.
oh yeah. Like I almost put this in the perspective, like, all right, let's say you were a pro golfer. Which ones like would you rank or would you want to win the most? I think we both agree we'd both want to win the Masters the most. And it's like, okay, if I didn't ever win a PGA Championship, cool. And it's just, dude, I don't know. They both have their own thing about them. Like the British Open has the most history, and it's like it's just amazing, like where golf was born on like that European side. But then the US Open, there's some, it's historically year in and year out the toughest tournament, the one that has the lowest scores. So it's almost what you value. I think I go British Open, honestly, but I go back and forth because when I saw this, it was a tough, just tough decision. And I really changed my opinion
Yeah,
every
I
year.
feel like maybe if I was European, I'd say the British Open, but I'll kind of cater toward the US Open. I mean, it has the difficulty and a bunch of awesome rotating courses. Not saying that the British Open doesn't, or the Open Championship now. Can't say the British Open, but the Open Championship has some great courses as well. But I just like the whole qualifying style for the US Open. It's like they make it the most difficult tournament, the most difficult conditions. You have the most golfers in the field, and like pretty much anyone can qualify for it. I think that's pretty cool. So you're definitely going to have some random names, and usually a couple of random names do pretty well.
I also saw someone make a good point. They said the Masters is the most prestigious, the US Open is the hardest, the Open has the most history, and the PGA Championship is a golf tournament.
I mean, especially this year with it being at Quail Hollow, I know it looks awesome on TV. I know it's relatively difficult and a very long course and all that jazz, but I mean, it's a regular stop on the PGA Tour, so it didn't have that like extra kind of, I don't even know, like that extra aura that puts it on
No.
top and make it seem like a major.
Yeah. PGA Championship, no aura points. Confirmed.
Nope. Scotty definitely gets some aura points though. I mean, he brought his kid
He
in to
slammed his hat.
he slammed his hat and then he brought his baby in to the to calculate the score or whatever and sits him on the ground and gives him his hat and his score book or yardage book to as makeshift toys. That was cool.
Oh, awesome. Oh, also, Nike, they usually kill it when, the Twitter posts after like one of their athletes do something big. They did world number one golfer, guilty. Shoot.
All the stuff on Twitter is like, 1 year ago, this man was locked up. The system works. He's turned his life around and healed.
Rehabilitation is so beautiful. See?
Rehabilitation's amazing. I
Amazing.
know Nike had one, the one for Rory after he won the Masters was so sick.
I wonder how many years they had that one in the drafts. You know what I mean?
Probably close to 10. I would say probably close to 10.
I hope one day it's revealed where like that was the one that they made for like the year that he blew it at the Masters, whatever year that was.
Yeah.
I don't know which one, but
I don't remember either. A long time ago. I know we got a guy for that, but he unfortunately doesn't look at him on podcasts. All right, let's move on here. We got some basketball that we missed out on, but honestly, did we really miss out on anything?
Well, I mean, I'm a
I don't
ball
think so.
lover, and I was switching back and forth between the PGA Championship and the Thunder Nuggets game. So, I mean, I
Yeah.
at least I don't know about you.
I checked the score a couple times. It got ugly pretty early. I was like, you know what? I don't really care. So, I mean, the final score was 125 to 93. That was OKC over Denver. And that puts them, tees them up to play our Minnesota Timberwolves conference finals. I think that's going to be a great series.
We have an aura off between Shea and Ant.
Does foul baiting really have aura, though? I don't think so.
I mean, it's more so like the gimmick that he does,
Oh,
with
yeah.
like the players behind him, and they're like, oh, like they're in what's it called? Their interviews, and it'll be the MVP. So, I mean,
Yeah, he definitely will be the MVP. Everyone was saying that whoever wins the game seven is going to be the MVP, Jokic or SGA.
yeah. And you know who couldn't care less? Jokic. He's just happy to get that PTO in, you know what I mean? And
Yeah.
it was just crazy once again. I looked at the box score at this game, and it seemed like it as I was watching it, but Jokic only took like 11 shots, maybe 12. And I mean, it's crazy to think because like he almost had a triple double. I mean,
He's
that's just
five for nine.
nine. He took 9 shots and he had 20 points and triple double. So that seemed to be obviously the Thunder's strategy, especially with Jamal Murray being off. I guess if he caught the ball, like they're double teaming him, they're kicking it out to Christian Brown and
Yeah,
Jamal
he's gonna
Murray.
miss three.
Yeah, exactly.
He's two for nine. He took the second most shots. He was 7 for 14. Jamal Murray was 6 of 16. It's kind of a pretty poor all-around performance from the old Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, it was, yeah, it. I don't know what the word is. I don't want to say like they looked flat, but it almost it was clear which team like wanted it more. And I know that's cheesy to say, but like just watching the game, you could tell. And I mean, it showed up on the scoreboard. The home crowd definitely helped with that. And I mean, the deeper and overall just better team ended up winning.
Yeah. Then we had a game six. New York blew out the Celtics without Tatum, obviously. That was kind of a it was kind of a no contest for pretty much the whole game. And can't say I watched too much of that one either. I mean, I really hate both these teams. I would have watched if Tatum was in, because I would have thought they had a much better chance to win, obviously, but Jaylen Brown tried to take over, 8 for 20 from the field, 20 points. Nothing too impressive. He was the only Celtic that had 20 points, and only two had over 10, which was Peyton Pritchard and Al Horford, the corpse of Al Horford.
Nope. Yeah, I'll admit I did not watch a single second of this game. I'll just go ahead and admit that. But I mean, there's not much you're gonna do if you're the Celtics when A, you're missing your best player, and B, four out of the five starting five on New York go for 20 plus.
And the other one has a triple double.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean it just is what it is with the Celtics. And I gotta say, Jaylen Brown might be in the best position in the NBA because this dude has like a I don't He has like one of the highest contracts in the NBA, and he's never going to get criticism because it's all just Jason Tatum's fault whenever something bad goes bad. So, and he's got a Finals MVP, so he's like already like established. So, and like you're not going to hear anybody say anything about Jaylen Brown being the reason this game, but if it was Tatum on the other end, you better know that this man could be getting all kind of slander. So.
Yes, he would. I'm honestly here for it. Any type of Celtic slander is just hilarious because I hate just about everything affiliated with the city of Boston for whatever reason that may be.
I
Let's
wonder
go
what
ahead
it
and what?
could be.
I don't know. We can go ahead and take a look at these conference final matchups, though. One thing I did want to point out before we kind of get into it, isn't it kind of weird that the Western Conference final starts before the Eastern Conference finals, when in the Eastern Conference finals, both teams have been done for a much longer time. Like the Knicks are getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days of rest after game six, and then the Pacers have been done for a while. And then the Thunder only get 2 days of rest and they play tomorrow as opposed to Wednesday. I just think that's kind of weird.
Yeah, I guess that's just a thing where these were, but I mean, I know that they change the schedule like all the time depending on game
Yeah.
matchups. So I wonder if it's like a thing where this was just always gonna be the, like, hey, game one of the Western Conference Finals is gonna be on this date at this time, like no matter what the other series does. Yeah, so I mean, I think this favors the Timberwolves, you know. Well, again, the
Yeah.
Thunder beat the Nuggets so bad, so it's not even like you can say, oh, it was an emotional, like if this game went to overtime, it was like, oh, game seven, you know, that the classic coming off an emotional game. But
Wonder
yeah.
how many minutes their starters played yesterday. Let's see. If they played, I mean, like the whole game, that's definitely some wear and tear. Yeah. SGA played 36 minutes. That was the most on their team. Holmgren 28, Jalen Williams 32. Nobody else played more than 17 minutes. So they also, dude, the Thunder are so deep. I'm just scrolling down here. They played 15 players on Sunday.
Yeah.
That's
And
a
then
lot.
you compare that to, I'm pretty sure the Nuggets play like well, they at least played more than what I
They
saw.
played 11, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because I remember there was one game in this series where I was looking at the box score and there was like they played like seven people the whole game,
Yeah.
something like
No,
that.
that's one thing I always see with the Timberwolves. They play eight players max. Like the next player off their bench is like Joe Ingles and Luka Garza, the kid from Iowa that went off that one year. And I don't think I've ever seen them on an NBA court in the playoffs yet. Just kind of funny. But I mean, I don't know if I would say the Timberwolves are even a top-heavy team, but they just don't play too many people.
Yeah, and I think that could eventually be the difference. I mean, every team shrinks their rotation in the playoffs, but it's going to be tough with A, being a home court advantage, and then B, them having just the much deeper team and like deeper rotation. Obviously, you know, we're all rooting for the Timberwolves here, but yeah, I wonder if that's going to eventually come back to bite them because it only takes like one injury and then it's like they're literally playing six people or seven people, you know,
Yep.
which I'm sure like they'd go deeper in the bench, but still like, you know, a
Yeah.
lot less room for error.
I agree with that. Speaking of home court advantage, you got OKC as a 7.5 point favorite in game one on Tuesday. Give me Minnesota. Give me the points.
Yeah.
That would be
Yeah.
honestly huge for them if they could take game one.
Yeah. I guess the one thing they can hang their hat on is, I mean, Minnesota, they were in this position last year, and the Thunder, I don't know. Like the Thunder, like this is of course their best year in a while. And they were like a decent team throughout the years, but I think that's the one thing you can hang your hat on is like once again, everyone knows the infamous OKC's average roster is 24 and a half, you know, and you would think that that would come into effect at some point. But we'll see. Yeah. Maybe rooting for them Timberwolves all day.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's go ahead and make a prediction on this one, the whole series.
Oh, put
Yeah,
me
I
on.
know, this is going to be tough. So, OKC, home team advantage. This is big time rest versus rust, the theory. I know, probably know who I'm going to take, but I'm going to take rest. Rest over rust. So, I'm going to say Timberwolves, but I think it's probably going to take 7 games. So, I'm going to say Timberwolves in 7. Ant-Man going to the finals.
I'm going through the series in my head. Like, I know the Thunder will at least take one of these games in their home court, so I think it'll be 1-1 going back to Minnesota, which of course that would be a win. I'm a one up you. I'm gonna say Timberwolves in six.
Nice. I wanted to say Timberwolves in 6, but just can't discount how good OKC has been all
Yeah, I
year.
know.
Best record in the league. Like you said, youngest team. You'd think that would help in long series like they've played. I mean, I know they swept Memphis in the first round. That doesn't count. But going on game 7 yesterday and then playing tomorrow is going to be interesting.
And another theory is put to the test. There's the classic, there's one side that says, oh, the young team, like the pressure will eventually get to them because they haven't been there before, yada, yada, yada. Then there's the other side of the aisle that says, no, listen, dude, they're so young that, like, they're almost stupid and they don't realize how big the moment is and they're just out there playing.
Yeah.
Lack of a better word, stupid, not the right term, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
So I almost feel like that could be the situation for the Thunder too, potentially. So I mean, there's a lot of clashing ideologies and theories, and I'm excited to see how this one's gonna end.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a great series. And we're not discounting the fact that Minnesota definitely has a bunch of young stars. Like Anthony Edwards is 23 years
Yeah.
old, he's younger than both of us. But they also have
That was
Gobert.
all for.
They have Gobert and Julius Randle, who I guess are kind of like the vets of their team, besides Mike Conley, who is the true vet. Mike Conley is 37 years old, starting point guard.
Yeah, dude, that's the one thing that worries me is Julius Randle played his butt off in this little past series that they won, and you almost wonder, is like, he's a good player, but Julius Randle's not dropping 30 on on the regular, and it's almost, I hope that he doesn't kind of re it's almost like a reduction to the mean if he kind
Yeah.
of stays, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's one thing I worry about, but hey, maybe he just stays hot and he keeps it
I
going.
mean, he's definitely been one of their best three
Oh
players
yeah.
all year long. So, I mean, you can kind of hang your hat, hopefully, that he's going to be a 25-10 guy, but it's going to be tough against the Thunder big men. I mean, Chet Holmgren is massive. I know he might be rail thin, like a toothpick, but he's massive. And it's not going to be easy for him. We can see that even talking about the game yesterday, he made hell for Jokic. I mean, he was on him from jump street. Like they were doubling and all that good stuff. But Holmgren was the main one of that. You got someone who's 7'3" who can like really go up and block shots down low.
I'm really interested to see too the Ant-Man versus the Lu Dort offense defensive matchup, because you would imagine Lu Dort's going to be guarding Anthony
They would
Edwards.
not dare and put SGA on.
No. I mean, SGA's got to conserve energy to drop his usual 33, 35 points. So, yeah,
Or
most definitely
15 of
not.
15 from the free throw line.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, SGA's most likely going to be on like Jaden McDaniels or something like that. So,
That's
yeah.
another thing. They don't have KD, but we still got Jaden
Jaden
McDaniels.
McDaniels,
Jaden
exactly.
McDaniels, man. Jaden McDaniels. All
Exactly.
right, let's go to this Eastern Conference final series. We got the Knicks versus the Pacers. Knicks with home field advantage, 4-point favorites in game 1. This is going to be an interesting series. It was last year. I know. Didn't Indiana took it last year, I think. And
Yeah, because that was
the
the
Knicks.
second round, or
Yeah.
well, yeah.
Knicks haven't made it this far since the 70s.
That's
But
crazy.
I think I've grown accustomed to liking the Indiana Pacers. I mean, I like what they do on offense. They got a lot of pieces. They're a very deep team, like what we were just talking about. I just don't know if I could trust or actively pull for the Knicks. I mean,
Yeah.
Halliburton's a little, he's weird, but he goes on Pat McAfee all the time and he's great. just seems like man of the people. He's an interesting player too, for sure. He's a big point guard, pass first guard for sure, but he can go out there and get you dirty like we saw in the closeout game.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, I'm definitely gonna be rooting for the Pacers to do this, but I'm just gonna go ahead and give my prediction. I think it's similar as the Timberwolves. I think the Knicks take this one. And honestly, I think it's in like five or six. It's one of those two. I would probably lean more on the six than the five, but I don't know. I just, it's almost like the Pacers are once again on this magic carpet ride where like they're not really supposed to be here.
Yeah.
And I think eventually it's going to catch up to them. And I mean, Haliburton, he's a great player, but he is bound to just have a stretch of just not great games, and which he honestly has kind of ever since he hit like the couple game winning shots against the past series, wherever those teams were. But
Cavs. Yeah,
yeah,
that
Cavs.
next game he had like 4 points.
Yeah, so I'm going with the Knicks, and I mean, I just want to see Ant-Man in the NBA Finals in Madison Square Garden. Feed me that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I think that would be my most desired matchup for the Timberwolves, if I wanted to put it that way. I do still think the Pacers are going to win this Knicks Pacers series, but I think it's in seven. If they're going to win, they're going to have to stretch it for sure. And Haliburton's going to have to be the guy that he was for four out of those 5 games versus the Cavs, because like we said, he did have that. He had like 4 or 6 points after he hit a couple of those game winners, but in crunch time, when it's been close, he has been almost exactly like Jalen Brunson, but a very different type of player. I mean, Jalen Brunson's like pretty small, just a really good shot creator, very fast. And Tyrese is just more of like a big fluid guard, but he's got an ugly jump shot, but it works. I don't understand how people do that.
I can't wait for this, for it to eventually though end up being the Thunder versus the Knicks, and it's going to be the most foul-baiting, disgusting form of flopping basketball you've ever seen.
I feel like that is the least desired finals matchup for just about everybody who watches basketball.
For the NBA, for Adam Silver, it's the Thunder and the Pacers. That's the least one because you have two small market teams, and there's only one thing the NBA hates more than rigged draft lottery theories, and that's small market teams winning championship. There are two small market teams playing in the finals because at least, you know, with Cleveland, they had LeBron at least, but they don't have that anymore.
Yeah, I agree with that. That would be, yeah, some of these matchups would be awful. Like, I wouldn't even want to watch it.
I know.
Knicks, yeah, Knicks versus Thunder would be terrible. I would not want to watch that. And Thunder versus Pacers would just be, I don't know, it's kind of just mid, like mid-finals matchup of the year. It's got to be Ant-Man. Got to have it. We got to have it, brother. Bring your aura with you to the
So much more.
Too much aura. All right, we had a couple baseball series this weekend. One of them with our college baseball Georgia Bulldogs versus Texas A&M, who were second to last in the SEC, I believe. They were terrible after starting preseason as the number one team in the country. So Georgia baseball took 2 out of 3 in a weekend series versus A&M, pretty much locked up a national seed. So we're going to be hosting a super regional. We're going to be hosting until Omaha. It seems like we're going to be in a better spot than we were in last year too, because we were the 7, I think, last year, the 7 seed. Every look and prediction that I've seen says that we're going to be top 5 seed. Either I've seen us either 4 or 5, sometimes 6. But just going over this game this past weekend, we won the first one 10-6. Bats came alive and got hot early. In the second game, A&M pitched their best pitcher by far. He threw an absolute gem. They beat us 6-0. We threw Brian Curley that day, so that was kind of disappointing. And then on the rubber match on Saturday, Georgia won 7-5 on the back of Leighton Finley, kind of an unsung hero later on here in the season. He pitched six innings of 1 or 2 run ball, I believe. And I mean, honestly, that's about all you can ask for. He's going to be our second starter, I believe, throughout the postseason. And then it's going to be Leighton Finley or Curley Finley, and then most likely Colton Smith. I don't know. That third starter is going to be up for debate as long as it's not freaking Charlie Goldstein. He's going to be selling car insurance within a month.
Yeah, I mean, we had to make it interesting, of course, with making it come down to the very last game of the season to clinch the national seed. But we did it. Good stuff. And yeah, as we said, now we look towards the regionals. Well, technically, we look towards the SEC tournament. But as
Yeah.
Johnson has said, not really too worried about this tournament, to be
Yeah.
fair.
Yeah, I was gonna say I have it on pretty good authority that we're probably gonna essentially just mail it in here in the SEC tournament. And we missed out on the double bye too. I actually have the let me pull it up for us.
Yeah, and is this tournament similar to in March Madness with the conference tournaments where like your ability to improve your seed and like your standing going into the tournament is like greatly exaggerated by people? Because I remember in March Madness this year, there were teams that won 3 games in their conference tournament and didn't move up a singular seed or didn't like push them into the tournament at all. So I wonder if like this is like pretty similar.
I think it is, at least from what I'm seeing. There's a chance that we could move up maybe one. Like, if we were, say, if we got like the short end of the stick and we were a six seed in the regionals, we probably, if we won 2 games or something like that or made the championship game, we'd probably move up one. But I think if we're already locked in as a 4 or 5, it would be too much to ask for us to move up. So, anyways, we do have the bracket pulled up here. And it's going to be starting on Tuesday. So we're obviously, where are we at? We're right here. We're the 5 seed. Unfortunately, only because we got swept by Vanderbilt. That was kind of a tough series in general. It was at Vanderbilt. It's not like we weren't even trying, but the bats were not alive. The bats were very, very dead. And Vanderbilt had some great pitching. But just kind of looking at the SEC as a whole here, absolutely loaded conference. Like, this is like exactly how it was in March Madness, where we're gonna have like how many teams make it to Omaha? 8? Something like that. 8? Well, I wouldn't be surprised if we had 5 or 6. It was just like the Elite Eight in basketball. I think we had 5 teams in there, which was crazy. But I mean, football, basketball, soccer, women's
Just
tennis,
more.
doesn't
Oh,
matter.
women's tennis, Georgia. We won the natty in that. Good shout out
Exactly.
right there.
Women's tennis, it don't
On top of
matter.
equestrian.
SEC, I mean, dude, the softball dogs too, took down Duke in their regional, made the super regionals after being unranked for the entire series, the entire season. But yeah, this is gonna be an interesting road. So we're gonna have the winner of Oklahoma, Kentucky, and that'll be on Wednesday. If I were to guess, we're probably gonna pitch a freshman, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if we lost this first game. But if we're gonna win one, it would be this one. We beat Oklahoma and Kentucky in both of our regular season series against them. We're gonna be playing them. These are all neutral sites games. In Hoover, Alabama, which I feel like is the most random place to have a conference tournament. Like, why is it in Hoover?
Your guess is as good as mine.
The
Like at
SEC
least
headquarters is in Birmingham. You'd think it would
Nashville
at least be there.
or something. I think Hoover's a like a pretty nice area though. I've been told that Hoover is essentially the Alpharetta of Alabama.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh. Well, maybe it won't be too bad, but it seems like for all intents and purposes, for Wes Johnson and the boys, they're gonna hop on a bus to Hoover, and they're gonna hop on a bus and come right back home after the first game.
So are these all single elimination?
Yes, I believe
Okay.
so. This is a new format that they're doing this year.
Yeah, I mean, this looks exactly like the format of the basketball tournament with the double byes for the top four seeds.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, it looks exactly like the SEC basketball tournament. I mean, you got to imagine it's going to be either LSU, Arkansas, or Texas that takes the whole thing. Not saying Vandy can't, especially they'll probably make it to this game against Texas, because
Okay.
saying that we mail it in and they end up getting to play Kentucky or Oklahoma, that seems pretty ideal for them.
But the thing about this conference though, dude, is like, yes, you have those top four seeds, but who's to say a Kentucky doesn't just go on a run, you know, or
Right.
even a Mississippi State, or who's the nine seed up there?
Bama.
Bama, you know,
Very
like
good team.
there are several teams in here, like 13 deep. Now, of course, you know, we know Missouri's not going to do anything.
Yeah, Tennessee here too is
Tennessee
arguably the
could, you
best
know,
talented team in the country.
this is harder for me to predict than the basketball one, because at least with the basketball one, you had it was either going to be Auburn or Florida, more than likely, in hindsight. But with this, it's like I could see 5 to 6 different teams winning this.
You could also see any one of these top four seeds essentially doing the same thing that we're going to do and
Yeah.
just pitch freshmen, get guys rest, prioritize rest over potentially having rust. And then,
I
yeah, it's going to be hard.
assume this is like basketball where if you win, you get an automatic qualifier. Is that the same
Yes.
thing? Yeah.
Yes.
All
I
right.
believe so.
So, Missouri,
Monarchs.
let's get
Missouri. Missouri going in. Hey. They beat Texas A&M.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all they got. At least they can hang their hat on that. They didn't go winless in the SEC. They beat the
Shout
preseason number one team in the series.
Shout out.
I mean, who would have thought? Not me for sure. But yeah, like we said, it seems like Georgia's got one of those 5 to 7, 4 to 6, 5 to 7 national seeds locked up. Up to a lot of speculation what the other ones look like, but that's what we're looking for. Got anything else on the Diamond Dogs?
Nope. Hey, I mean, this is just classic. I'm gonna be watching. I'm gonna be tuning in. And if we win, cool. I would almost rather save the arms. So, like, if we lose, cool too. So, it is what it is.
Yeah, I think best case scenario, I wouldn't be surprised if we win that first game and then just kind of mail it in versus Vandy. Just at least get another good SEC win under your belt, even though it's two teams that you've already beaten. But anyways, we got some more baseball to keep cooking on here, this time at the MLB level. Got a lot of Braves news this weekend. Lots and lots of Braves news to go over. So most importantly, took 2 out of 3 over the Red Sox. Should have taken 3 out of 3, but I'm convinced Brian Snicker was asleep on the bench and he does not know how to manage a bullpen for the sake of his life. Because in high leverage situations, we threw Aaron Bummer and Rafael Montero, I think is his name. I know he's Montero. What's his first name? It was like the most high leverage situations in the game, and we threw. Yeah, we threw Rafael Montero, Enyel De Los Santos, and Aaron Bummer. Aaron Bummer gave up. He got one out, gave up 2 hits, 2 runs, 2 earned. De Los Santos came in and got 2 outs and kind of shut the door on him. And then Montero got 2 outs, gave up 2 hits, 2 runs, 2 earned runs. We were up 6-2 on the Celtic, or not the Celtics, the Red Sox. We were up 6-2 on the Red Sox going into the 8th inning, and we lost. That was on Saturday. That was game 2 of the series. I unfortunately had the displeasure of watching that game. It was terrible. I'm not gonna lie to you. In the bottom of the 9th inning, I turned it off because I knew we were gonna lose and just wait for the notification to come out. Final 6-7, Red Sox hit I think it was Rafael Devers hit a walk-off home run. It was tough for sure. Yesterday we came back. Bats are still alive. That's the one good thing we can hang our hats on in this series. We scored a lot of runs. Yesterday we won 10-4 off of 15 hits, 16 hits, and a couple more home runs from Matt Olson and Marcelo Zuna.
The biggest takeaway I came away with this is that we need to talk bad about more Braves players because it seems like every player that was a topic of conversation in our podcast leading into this series showed up and was a big reason we won this series. I mean, we could first start off with the guy, Matt Olson. I mean, we weren't talking bad about him or anything. We were
Huge.
just saying, hey, he's getting unlucky. Like, when's it going to happen? He gets like 7 hits in the series, homers in 2 out of the 3 games. Ozzie showed up here and there. He got multiple hits in a game, and he had at least one hit in every game. And then Verdugo, he went 3 for 5 in the rubber match yesterday. He got another hit, and I think it was game two. He didn't play in one of the games, but overall, big time series win. We're now back above 500. And yeah. We're going into now a series against the Nationals. Hopefully the bats can stay hot
Gotta
and
stay hot.
gotta stay hot. So yeah, everything that we've wanted to see happened except for a sweep. That would have been the most ideal, but never gonna complain about winning a series.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm wearing my Braves are 500 over hat too, and I'm very happy to be doing so. Happy Braves fan today. Especially going to be even happier tomorrow when Spencer Strider takes the mound against the Nationals.
And we get to keep seeing the Gwinnett Stripers Twitter account posting Ronnie highlights of him getting extra base hits, hitting homers, doing his thing. Love seeing that out of the guy.
Yeah, speaking of which, when is the time? When do you make the call?
Soon.
Yeah, I think it's got to be. I think we come home
Yeah.
Friday against the Padres.
I
I
think at
wouldn't be
this
surprised if that's it.
Yeah, I think at this point it's more so, yeah, like more logistics. Like, let's just go ahead and finish up this road trip, give him a few more starts, and then when he comes back to energize the fans and all that. And he would be coming home. When is it the next series against the who are
It's
we homing?
Friday against the Padres at home.
Padres, yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a big series against a very good team where it would be quite beneficial if he was on the team for that.
Yeah, because I've always was curious about how that is. Like if you are in the Braves situation right now where it's like, okay, Ronnie is most likely ready, but do we really want to call him up for like a series, which like I mean, I know they can easily just take the PJ up there to Washington. But you know, it's like, eh, we'll just wait till like we're coming back home. Like I wonder if that's like more in the mindset with these MLB front offices, or if like they just don't care. It's like, oh, we're in San Francisco. Okay, send them up there, and they only have one game left in the series. You know what I mean? Like how
Yeah.
that works.
I think it's probably just kind of getting him some more rest and also being
Yeah.
as cost efficient as you can. But especially with Liberty Media, it seems like, oh, our hands are tied. We're so broke. We're not going to spend any money. They're not going to send him on a PJ up to Washington, D.C., even though it probably wouldn't cost them all too much. But we're just with the way that transactions have gone recently for the Braves, it's not likely. I just definitely think he's coming back Friday for the Padres. I really hope so.
Okay, we'll see though. And
Yeah.
so who else do we want to let's see here. So
Who
if we
can we
can keep
trash
it up.
on now?
Spencer Strider, you're terrible. Like, I don't even know why you're still on the team. Like, you're injured all the time. We gave you a contract prematurely. Michael Harris, we gave
Oh,
you
dude,
another
Michael
contract
Harris, worst player in
prematurely.
baseball. Worst player in
Like,
baseball this year.
yeah, worst player, overrated,
Terrible.
one-hit wonder.
Sad.
Marcelo Zuna, your
322
downfall is
average.
imminent. You're old. You have the gimmick with the guy on Zuna and the Braves. That's the only reason why you're staying relevant. Chris Sale, you're washed. You had a lucky series coming home against your home club. Spencer Schwellenbach, your last name, I don't even know how to spell. Like, you're terrible. Overall,
Austin
Braves.
Riley, all you want to do is hunt.
Yeah, exactly. Austin Riley, all you want to do is hunt. You don't even care about baseball. You're all just terrible players, and I don't even know why I'm watching you guys anymore.
I don't either, honestly. You hit the nail right on the head on that one. I think other than that, this kind of off topic, especially from the trashing of the players, but the Braves have had the best record in baseball since April 19th.
Yeah.
They're 18 and 10, so that is exactly 1 month ago today. They're 18 and 10, just finished up. This is our first off day after playing 17 games in a row. So definitely on the come up. Definitely on the come up. I think, yeah, we just need to keep compounding on this. I know we have Nationals, Padres. I don't know who we have after that. My calendar is not
I think it's
working.
Dodgers.
Phillies.
Phillies, yep.
Phillies, and then we've already played the Dodgers a lot, man. Yeah, it's Nationals, Padres, Phillies, Red Sox again.
Yeah.
Red Sox at home this time. I don't know, dude. I like playing in Fenway, that little Bush League ballpark. Our bats like
Yeah.
it too.
Oh yeah. Oh, by the way, off topic. Well, it's on the topic of baseball, but if you ever think to yourself you're in a bad position in life, just remember the Rockies are in the Dodgers division.
Dude, that division's wild. The Dodgers, Padres, and Giants all have at least 28 games. The Diamondbacks are 25 and 22, and the Rockies have 8 total wins.
8 total wins.
8. Yes, that is half that last year's White Sox, the worst team in the history of baseball. At May 20th, they had almost double the Rockies' wins. I think they had the 14 or 15.
Yep. So yeah, you can count on both hands. That is going to be the new exercise. So next podcast we come and we do later in this week. Memorize all the wins that the Rockies have because they won't have double digits by the time we do the next recording. That's
Okay.
the homework assignment.
Got it.
The Braves are one of them, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I was just about to say, Chris Sale pitched a gem and we lost 2-0. Like, get me out of here. And it was a day game, too. It was terrible. Terrible game. All right. Last topic we got here to hit on today is kind of one of your topics that you brought up within the last couple of episodes, I want to say. You brought up the whole, what is it, rookie mini camp with the whole Ja'Marr Chase can't catch thing. Ja'Marr Chase dropping so many passes all over the place. And you said, who's going to be this year's version of that? And at the time, we had Mason Graham puking everywhere. So I thought that was it. But even more comparable one would be these route running videos of Travis Hunter stumbling all over his face, catching with his body. I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you, they were some pretty bad videos. Like all of the routes, he doesn't make clean breaks with his cuts. He's running wrong routes, not coming back to the ball on hitches or comebacks. And catching with your body is the most, I don't know, disturbing thing to me. It's like, I just feel like that's the most simple thing in football. Like, you're a wide receiver, your job is to catch the ball. You catch the ball with your hands, like, out. Don't let it get to your body.
Yeah, I will say though, Antonio Brown at the height of his just what's it called? His career in Pittsburgh, he was the most body catching receiver I've ever seen. Like I'm not kidding, like if you were a Steelers fan growing up, like in like the Killer Bees era, you Antonio Brown literally, like of course he had great hands and he would always do that too, but like I swear he would go as opposed to this all the time. And it worked for him somehow. But yeah, I think that this is prime example of the news cycle slow. What are we going to talk about? Oh, these people are taking videos at training camp. And of course, like I've brought up, it's Ja'Marr Chase can't catch. It's Travis Hunter can't run routes. I'm just waiting for week one when Travis Hunter actually routes up a corner or a safety, depending on who's covering him, and everyone's going to forget about these videos that ever happen. And it can also work on the inverse because there are also times where it's like, oh, so and so's tearing up training camp. He completed all of his passes on air. It's like,
Yep.
whoa.
At Shador Sanders.
Yeah. I honestly wasn't even like doing that, but then like I just realized that sounded like I was taking that shot. So thank you for
Mean, he's a
that.
Brown too.
Yeah,
That's
that's
your
true.
job. Take
Yeah,
shots at him.
that's true. That again, that is just another situation where I'm like, does Dylan Gabriel even have a chance? Because if even if they're equal, like you know they're just gonna I don't know. So we're gonna see about that. But yeah. Rookie mini camp, exciting times. But I did see that the annual rookie picture came out, I believe, where all the rookies are standing and like they take the picture. I remember vividly Kenny Pickett. Whenever it was his year, he was blinking during the picture, and that told me all I needed to know. So, Will Howard, though, he had a nice smile. He's looking at the camera, didn't blink, so we're in the clear.
No Falcons in the picture.
None.
None of our
Chandler
guys were
Parker
there.
didn't get the invite, dude.
He wasn't even there. Oh, you know what he was doing? He was recruiting for Georgia this past weekend.
Oh, okay.
He was taking pictures with Sha'Darius Tootle Jr.
Let's
First team all name team, and also
go.
looks like his little brother in the
Ooh,
pictures.
let's go. Oh, great stuff.
Yeah, that was the only reason why I knew that Jalen Walker wasn't there. It's like, if he's going to get the chance to do so and give back to the program who gave so much to him, he's going to do so. That's the best part about him staying in Atlanta, is he's going to be there for a lot of those.
Oh yeah, yeah, you're right about that, 'cause
You might be Kirby. He might be technically on the staff right now. He might be Kirby's best recruiter.
oh, dude, I looked up rookie premiere and then the rookie premiere of 10 years ago just popped up and all this nostalgia is coming to me.
Oh.
Let's see here. Who do I see here? I see Stephon Diggs, Tyler Lockett, Jamison Crowder. Oh my. David Johnson. Oh, dude.
2016 David Johnson. I'm gonna tell my grandkids about him.
Oh my gosh, dude. I'm telling you. I see Chris Conley in there.
Oh.
Marcus Mariota. Oh, this was the Mariota, Jameis Winston. Melvin
Chris Conley's
Gordon.
still kicking it in the NFL.
Oh, dude. All right, I gotta show this. I just saw Todd Gurley. I'm gonna cry. Can't do it. Oh,
What could have
man.
been? Still third in the NFL in rushing touchdowns since 2020. Mind blowing. I see that stat like once a week. I'm like, all right, we get it. He tore his ACLs, plural, and had arthritis in his knees
Plural.
badly. He had bad arthritis. But which, I mean, it's kind of sucks because he didn't come out of Georgia with too much tread on his tires either.
Yeah, just more so the injuries. Yeah, because he was injured several times at Georgia. So, hey, Todd Gurley, I'll always remember you. That kickoff return for a touchdown against Buffalo in 2013. That's when I knew.
Dude, it was the kickoff return against Clemson for me. I was there. That was the game. He had like 296 all-purpose yards and four touchdowns. I was like,
Yep.
I will be forever indebted to you.
Dude, whenever he came back against Kentucky and had that stretching touchdown over the pylon, you remember that?
Yep.
Oh,
Remember when he came
the
back against
robotic
Auburn?
arm.
Yeah. When he came back against Auburn for that night game? Yeah, I was at that one too.
Sad stuff. Sad stuff. Hey, but
Yeah.
once again, I always say it, I'm really glad he ended up getting his bag from the Rams because
Yep.
so many running backs are going to be screwed by that, a la James Cook. Somebody going to pay the man.
Yeah. Pay the man. I know he comments on every single running back extension or contract or even contract talks. It comes up on my Twitter. I'm like, no, dude, they're probably
Yeah,
not gonna pay him.
dude.
I obviously like the Bills too, which sucks. Like, dude, pay my dog. They're like, no, we're just gonna draft another running back in the fifth,
Yeah,
and he's
we're
gonna
going
be
to pay
awesome.
Ray Davis.
Yeah, I mean Ty Johnson, they got some good running backs for sure. But I think that's gonna be it for episode 14 of the Gridiron Pulse. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, share us on social media, and we'll be back Thursday for another episode. Peace.
Yep.